Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This show is for college recruiting fans.
What a run! He's got a lane! Wow! Touchdown! What an athlete!
The inside story on the Ducks, the Beavers, the national recruiting scene, and high school prospects across Oregon and Southwest Washington. Recruiting with Andrew Nemec. Brought to you each Thursday at 7 p.m. by Power Rents. Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080.
Hoo-wee.
The Fan.
Hello and welcome to Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. The updates just keep rolling in for these Oregon Ducks. The commits just keep rolling in for these Oregon Ducks. And every time it seems like we have one of these shows, again, they're once a week, it seems like Oregon has another four-star prospect. I think people forget. Oregon hasn't hosted any visits. I mean, neither has anybody else. But the whole thing for Oregon all along was, well, they have Nike and they have those facilities. They haven't even been able to show that off. And they've got the number three recruiting class in the nation. They haven't even been able to show that off. And they have five of the top seven recruiters in the Pac-12 among assistant coaches. Mario Cristobal doesn't count. If they did, he'd probably be number one. Oregon is absolutely killing it on the recruiting trail, and it continued this week with the addition of Dante Thornton, the number six wide receiver in the country. He's 6'5", 205 pounds, and recently ran a 4.4 40. He is a creature. He is an athletic creature. They don't make kids half my age. He's half my age, which not only ages me and makes me feel terrible about myself, but also it's remarkable that somebody that young could be 6'5", 205 pounds, and run a 4.4 40. Oregon had the number one class in the nation at wide receiver before they got Dante Thornton. And if you listen to this show, we've talked about him being a likely addition for several weeks. And the final nail in the coffin of that prediction was Damon David. Damon David was all along for months a three-star wide receiver, three-star safety out of Maryland. Good player. In the last few months, his stock has absolutely skyrocketed. He's now a four-star on Rivals. He's a four-star on 24/7 Sports. And he wanted to be a package deal with Dante Thornton, the number six receiver in the nation, who Oregon was in really, really good shape with anyway. But when Damon David committed to Oregon, the cat was out of the bag. Those two wanted to go together. They definitely weren't going to go across the country without going with one another. And not enough was really made about that. And part of it is you want the kids to have their own decisions. You want the kids to be able to announce their commitments on their own without it being completely spoiled. But anybody who really understood the process, and those close to both Damon David and Dante Thornton, would now openly admit that the two were absolutely going to the same school. So it seemed like a given for a number of weeks. But when Dante Thornton first visited, he was committed to Penn State. He visited last summer for Oregon's Saturday Night Live camp. And if you don't follow recruiting day in, day out, the Saturday Night Live camp traditionally in a non-COVID year was something brought in by Willie Taggart. And it's being popularized among programs all over the country that are elite. What they do is they host a really fun event where the guys do stuff off the field for a day, but also have a 2 to 3 hour camp on the field that is open to the public. Oregon's done it since Willie Taggart. When Willie Taggart left, Mario Cristobal took it over. Dante Thornton was there last year. The kids pay their own way. You're not allowed to pay for visits. You're not allowed to pay for their meals. So the kids that come are really interested. They're genuinely interested in checking out Oregon. And for the last few years, Oregon's had 30, 40, 4- and 5-star guys come through. Usually only a few 5-stars, but 25, 30, 35, 40 4-star prospects. And they can come from anything from the junior class all the way down to the freshman class. Seven McGee, the running back in this class, went to the first one as a freshman and might have been the best player there, and he was playing slot receiver. It was either him or Jalen Waddle. Those were the two guys that really stood out. Guess what? Jalen Waddle's going to be a first-round draft pick. That's how good Seven McGee was as a freshman. But at that camp, Dante Thornton was committed to Penn State. Oregon doesn't care. The kid's going to pay his own way. They want to get big-time receivers. They want to get a chance to look at him. They liked him. Had a relationship with Penn State. Had a relationship with Joe Moorhead. So we'll see. Joe Moorhead's a great recruiter. He's probably going to stay at Penn State, right? Well, a lot changes in recruiting. Joe Moorhead gets a head coaching job, loses that head coaching job, ends up at Oregon. Oregon has all along been in the fold for Dante Thornton, who previously, it's seemingly in a previous life because it was 2.5 years ago almost now, had a relationship with Joe Moorhead when he was the coach at Penn State. Now that he was at Oregon, that benefited the Ducks. That's how these things kind of come together. The relationship with Dante Thornton, yes, we've known for weeks seemingly he'd choose Oregon. And yes, the writing was on the wall with Damon David. But the path to Dante Thornton committing to Oregon actually kind of meandered a little bit. Because there was a time when Dante Thornton was committed to Penn State to play in Joe Moorhead's offense. It's amazing how these things change. And now Oregon has the unquestionable number one wide receiver class in America. This is a program whose bugaboo, whose area of weakness, whose area they cannot seem to figure out has been wide receiver. If you followed recruiting for a long time, you know this. If you haven't, you may not be aware that Oregon lost 7 4-star pass catchers in the class of 2018. 7 different 4-star wide receivers and tight ends decommitted from Oregon in the class of 2018. In the class of 2019, Oregon was in the mix for a number, nearly double digit, top 20 receivers in the nation. They were in it for nearly half of the top 20 receivers in the nation at one point or another in the class of 2019. They settled for guys that were 10, 11, 12 on their board. That's the reality. They just missed and missed and missed and missed. And guess what? You can go up and look up some of those names from the class of 2019. Those kids are not playing a ton. In the class of 2020, same issue. Oregon struggling to get wide receivers. Can't seem to bring them in. They get Johnny Wilson, 6'6", 230 pounds. Looks the part when he goes to Oregon Saturday Night Live camp. Looks like a player. Fast forward to the early signing period. On the first day of the early signing period, Johnny Wilson sends in his national letter of intent to Arizona State. And so here we are. Here we are entering 2021, and Oregon has to recruit wide receiver well. They haven't done it in 3 years. If you watch this team, you know they're getting better at offensive line. You know about the quarterback pipeline. You know their defense is getting better. You know about 5-star linebackers Noah Sewell and Justin Flo and Dante Manning, the 5-star corner, who all are true freshmen this year. You know about Kayvon Thibodeau, the number one recruit in the nation who committed 2 years ago, had 9.5 sacks in the regular season last year. You know all that if you listen to this show. They needed receivers in this class in a big way. So what happens? They lose their offensive coordinator. COVID happens and no one gets to host official visits. And while Troy Franklin, the 5-star wide receiver, is on campus, Oregon announces their wide receiver coach has left for Kentucky. While he's on his visit. Doesn't matter. Best recruiters on the West Coast, it's not close. 5-star wide receiver Troy Franklin commits anyway. Under Armour All-Americans Kyron Ware-Hudson and Isaiah Brevard choose Oregon. And then this week they get Dante Thornton, the number 6 wide receiver in the country. They haven't hosted visits. Oregon has not hosted a wide receiver on campus this calendar year with the current offensive coaching staff in place. Think about that. They've got kids all the way buying in. Family, belief in playing time, belief in a system. They've never seen Joe Moorhead's system in Eugene. Brian McClendon has never actually met many of these kids face to face. And yet, number one wide receiver class in America. I don't know how they do it. They're on such a different level than every other program, definitely in the Pac-12, and it's starting to become better than almost any other program in America at recruiting. All the rules. Kids have to see it in person. Kids have to get to know face-to-face their future coach. They have to know their position coach. They have to have a strong relationship with their position coach. If they don't, it's going to be hard. If your thing is facilities, you better be able to show those off, and it better be a kid that's interested in facilities. They better be interested in the Nike tie, or they're not going to go to Oregon. None of those things get to be true this year. Kids can't visit. They can't check out the facilities. Oregon's not selling the Nike connection. Not in person. These kids don't have any idea how Brian McClendon coaches up Oregon receivers. They've never played a game with him as the wide receiver coach. Oregon recruits that are committing right now have never seen what this offense looks like. They have the number one collection of wide receivers and the number one collection of tight end commits in the country. And they have a five-star quarterback in Ty Thompson. It's remarkable. This class would be remarkable in a year where Oregon gets to host visits. This class would be remarkable in a year where somehow, some way, a five-star quarterback sprouted up from Portland, Oregon. This class would be phenomenal if somehow they got this class together while USC, UCLA, Washington, and half the rest of the Pac-12 was under sanctions. This class would still be impressive. And yet Oregon, without being able to host visits, to show off those facilities everyone's talking about, when no one really knows what their offense is going to look like yet, although, again, they can sell Penn State from 2-3 years ago. No one fully knows. No one's ever officially seen it, what this offense is going to look like. Despite all of that, Oregon has the number three recruiting class in the country. Number one in the Pac-12. Before Mario Cristobal got to Oregon and became the head coach at Oregon three recruiting cycles ago, Oregon had never had the number one recruiting class in the Pac-12. Never. Not once in their history. With Dante Thornton, the number six wide receiver in the country, committing this week, barring a catastrophe, Oregon's already locked up the crown. They've already locked up the Pac-12 crown, not just for this year, but for the third consecutive season. It's not the goal. It's not a brand new hurdle to be number one in the Pac-12 in recruiting. It's the expectation. The expectation in Eugene now is that you get the number one recruiting class in the Pac-12. If you don't, it was a missed opportunity. Oregon's not even a top 25 producer of high school football talent. The state of Oregon is not a state known for producing high school football talent. You cannot build a recruiting class with all Oregon kids and have a top eight recruiting class in the Pac-12. You have to go pluck people out of everybody else's home state. You have to go take the best player out of Maryland. You have to go take the best players out of Nevada and Utah and California and Arizona. You have to compete for the best players in Washington. If you don't, you're not going to be a top 25 recruiter nationally. Oregon not only has the best player out of more than half of the states in the West region, Oregon, Arizona, Nevada, Utah, they not only have all those number one players out of the region, but they've been able to do it again, without even hosting visits, without even getting to do the thing that for years everybody's been saying, particularly the naysayers have been saying, well, Oregon has an advantage. Nike paid for those facilities. Of course Oregon does well. They're getting all the shallow kids that only care about facilities. Mario Cristobal goes, meh, can't host them. Doesn't matter. New offensive coordinator. Offense, we're not entirely sure what this offense is going to look like in Eugene. Eh, doesn't matter. Best offensive class in program history. It's remarkable. If you're an Oregon fan, you should be doing backflips. Number three class in the nation. It's almost guaranteed to be a top seven class in the nation. It is the best recruiting class in program history. And today, and this week, they got Dante Thornton giving them four of the top 100 players in the country at wide receiver. In the program's history, they only have five. They've almost matched the entire history of wide receiver recruiting in 1 year. Oregon's going in the right direction. There is a program in the Pac-12 that is headed in such a bad direction that high school football coaches in this state are talking about blackballing them from recruiting their players. I'll tell you what state it is and which Pac-12 program is absolutely, unquestionably in the midst of some dirty, dirty recruiting. Next on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. Oregon killing it in recruiting. You knew that was going to happen. I told you before last signing day, so prior to December, that Oregon would sign their best class ever in 2021. Sure enough, here we are, the number three class in America. This week, they had Dante Thornton Jr., the number six wide receiver in the nation. It gives them four All-Americans at wide receiver. They have the number one receiver class in the nation, a program that traditionally has not recruited the wide receiver position well. Five-star wide receiver Troy Franklin, Dante Thornton, who committed this week out of Maryland, and Under Armour All-Americans Kyron Ware Hudson and Isaiah Brevard. Oregon's doing it right. I think it's safe to say Oregon's doing a good job. This week, we saw an example not just of a Pac-12 program doing a bad job, but a Pac-12 program that absolutely has stuck their foot in the dirtiest of recruiting tactics I've seen in the Pac-12 in the last several years. And people can say, you know, I like Herm Edwards at Arizona State. I like that he wants to handle things like a business. When he says, and he's being cute, and he gets to Arizona State and says, you know, when I got here, I forgot there's no draft. I can just pick the players I want and recruit them. I forgot I had to recruit mom and dad, but now I can sell myself and my program to kids all across the country, and they can pick me when I pick them. Great. Great little soundbite for him. That hasn't been the reality at Arizona State. And when he says he's going to handle things like a business, what he actually means is what happened this week to Marcus Mbau and tight end Garrett Gillette. Two kids out of Wisconsin. Marcus Mbau committed on a Zoom call with an offensive analyst, the head coach, the offensive coordinator, and his position coach. And when they had him on the Zoom call, they talked about how they wanted to bring him in as part of the family. They liked how he'd improved. They liked that he was a good kid. They liked that he had no character issues, that he was a 6'6", 305-pound offensive lineman. And sure, he was a three-star, but they saw a lot of promise in him. That was July. Hasn't been that long. Hasn't been many camps. Barely been any high school football games across the country. Same thing for Garrett Gillette. Three-star tight end out of Wisconsin. Commit across the country. We want you to be a part of the family. We believe in you. This week, those were just two of the three players Arizona State called out of the blue on Monday evening and dropped from their recruiting class. Now, you can say to me, Andrew, doesn't this happen often? Doesn't it happen where kids decommit all the time? Doesn't it happen where a kid gets recruited over all the time? It used to. It used to. But then, and it's a nice little invention in the last 5 years, college football programs figured out you can either give a kid a committable or a non-committable offer. Bear with me here. It gets a little complicated. We'll get there. Committable offers are offers to your top kids on your board, and you tell them, this offer's committable. You want to commit today? You can. Non-committable offers are, we really, really like you. We want you to be a part of things, but we want to build the relationship further. Or there's a couple guys on our board higher than you, and until they make their decisions, you can't commit. But we want you to know, and here are the players you should watch, if these kids come off the board, you're the guy. And you can say a lot about high school kids, and you can say they're too interested in social media attention. You can say they're too interested in the publicity. Most of the time, high school kids will tell you that approach is very refreshing because they know where they stand. I have committable offers from these four schools. I have non-committable offers from these two schools. And the two schools that are non-committable offers, I'm waiting on Tyler Jones out of Kentucky, and I'm waiting on Steve Thompson out of California. And if those guys commit to other schools, then my offer is committable, and I know where I stand. I know what to watch. I know how it all shakes out. That's how you avoid dropping committed players. Once you offer a kid a committed offer, a committable offer, it is the poorest of poor form to pull their offer. It is the poorest of poor form in the middle of a coronavirus pandemic where kids aren't sure about their futures. They aren't sure about their offers because they haven't gotten to visit everywhere. Everything's based on Zoom, which is happening over video calls or FaceTime. There's a certain degree of trust that needs to come from the adults in the college recruiting landscape to say, we can't meet you in person like normal. You can't come here four or five times. It's not allowed. So we're going to have to be as honest as we can and as open as we can on Zoom conference calls and on FaceTime and with what we're doing as a program so that you know you're good. So when Arizona State brings four or five coaches to a Zoom call and tells Marcus Mbau and his parents that they're going to take care of him, that in the middle of a pandemic, their son can travel cross country for college and he'll be safe. When they say that, there's a certain degree of trust that needs to come with it. There's a certain degree of respect for the process that needs to come with it. Arizona State absolutely took a dump on that trust. And I'm telling you, and I know this, and I've heard it from multiple sources out of Wisconsin. There are multiple coaches in the state of Wisconsin, the homes of Garrett Gillette and Marcus Mbau, who have said, if Arizona State comes to our school, we are not going to let them recruit our players. It's over for them. They're lucky it's not Nevada. They probably can get away with it because it's Wisconsin. Because there may not be that many kids in the country that want to go from Wisconsin to Arizona. And that's the math they did. What's the collateral damage of us dropping these Wisconsin kids and potentially going after a couple kids that are better? Well, we might lose Wisconsin for a few years. That's the math they did. And you can think they didn't, and you can think, oh, Nimick, you're taking it too seriously. I'm telling you, I heard from multiple Pac-12 assistant coaches this week that what Arizona State did was one of the dirtiest things they've seen in recruiting in the last 5 years. And I'll tell you, folks, recruiting ain't that clean. What Arizona State did was disrespectful. They lied to a kid and his parents, multiple kids and their parents, not just kids potentially they were recruiting, but kids who were already planning their move across the country to the state of Arizona. You don't do it. It's the lowest of form of recruiting. It is the dirtiest recruiting there is because we've already figured this out. This is bad, college football said a few years ago. We can't have pulling offers from kids. We can't have that. We can't have it anymore. It's not okay. We can't have offers getting pulled from kids who aren't committed, and we sure as heck can't have kids getting their offers pulled who are committed. We can't have it. So let's have a committable versus non-committable offer to get rid of this. and every civilized program in the Pac-12, every civilized program in the SEC, for God's sake, said, yeah, we're not doing this anymore. Not Arizona State, not Herm Edwards. He's running it like a business. Herm Edwards is an embarrassment in the Pac-12, and so is that coaching staff. Absolutely shame on them. And worse, and unfortunately, it's stuff I can't even, it's a situation I can't talk about on the air. This is the second time this staff has gotten raked over the coals for something they did in recruiting. I'm not allowed to talk about it. You're just going to have to take my word for it. There's another story out there of Arizona State being dirty as all heck when it comes to recruiting. This is the second time. Shame on them. Shame on Arizona State.
Jeez, dude.
Brutal. Unacceptable. I mean, truly, there aren't many situations worse than this. When a kid commits across the country during a pandemic and isn't sure where he stands with his offers, it's hard to figure out. It's a hard situation to navigate. And part of being a cross-country commit is a level of trust that you're going to be taken care of. And part of that commitment comes with reassuring parents that your kid will be taken care of. And I know for a fact, having talked to those kids about this situation, part of it was Arizona State promised, we will take care of your kids. When we take these kids, we want them. They're a part of our family. When they commit, it's over. We will make sure they feel safe. We will make sure they're a part of things. This is a committable offer, and you committed. You're locked in. It's over. You don't have to worry about it. Tell all the other opportunities you have to go away. Because we're Arizona State. You're committed to us, and we're committed to you. So tell everybody else, thanks for playing. Goodbye. Don't have a kid do that in the middle of a pandemic when he can't take other visits, when he can't rebuild that trust in October, and then try to say, well, it's part of the game. No, it's not. It's not part of the game. Oregon doesn't do it. Oregon State doesn't do it. UCLA doesn't do it. USC doesn't do it. Heck, we haven't seen this story in the SEC this year. The SEC doesn't do it. And they would absolutely sell their own mothers for an extra scholarship spot. When the SEC says, this tactic is too dirty for us. For Arizona State to be like, we'll do it not once, not twice, but three times in the same week. You're jerks. You're absolute jerks. Shame on Arizona State. And this, again, is the second time Arizona State has done something in the recruiting world that really bothered Pac-12 coaches to the point where I heard about it. And when Pac-12 coaches are willing to say, not names, they can't say names, right? Because that's a violation. But they can say, Arizona State is doing some dirty recruiting.
Right.
And that's what we've got right now. We've got a Pac-12 program doing something that if Oregon or Oregon State did, I would be writing a column tearing them apart for it. And that's one area where you could feel great about your in-state coaches. Jonathan Smith and Mario Cristobal are not like Herm Edwards on the recruiting trail.
That's, I feel like, a plaque we should get put up at the Valley Center for Oregon State.
Don't pull committed kids offers, plaque.
We don't do that.
By the way, credit to Oregon State, though. They see the kid gets his offer pulled. They watch his film, I assume, like him, and they offer him. Marcus Mbau from Wisconsin has an offer from Oregon State. 6'6", 305 pounds, multiple Pac-12 offers, and his recruitment's been stalled out for the last 2 or 3 months. He hasn't built relationships with anybody except Arizona State because he was committed there before they pulled his offer. So he's got to find a new landing spot without getting to take any visits between October and December signing period. And I could see Oregon State entering the mix. In fact, Marcus told me he really appreciates the offer from Oregon State because he felt like he was in a little bit of a lurch there. And Oregon State's going to be a contender for his services. So this story ties right back around to the Northwest. When you handle things with class and dignity, you kind of get the benefit of it. I don't know if it's karma. I don't know if it's just handling things the right way. But Oregon State may benefit from Arizona State's jerk move of the month.
Thanks, Herm.
Herm.
Good. Jerk move of the month. Is that your new segment?
Dude, we could.
Jerk
easily.
Move of the month?
The thing is, there'd be times where, like, I would know about it and a lot of people would know about it and we'd have to say, like, I'm not allowed to talk about it on the air.
Well, that's when we could just pick a random jerk.
A random jerk.
Yeah.
Mike Lynch is your random jerk of the month. Mike Lynch, you're a jerk.
Mike, you cut in front of somebody in traffic. You're a jerk.
Yeah, I feel like there'd be a decent chance that Luke Anderson would get it too often, and different people at 1080 would get it a lot, and that would be bad. If we gave it to just Mike Lynch and Luke Anderson and Isaac Ropp and Big Sook all the time. Like, Luke Anderson, when you eat a burger, you spin it because you save the last bite for the middle of the hamburger. You're the jerk of the month.
You really got to let that one go.
It's ridiculous.
I know.
It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
You're talking about my co-host here, man.
I like him. He just eats a burger like an idiot. It's unacceptable. For people who don't know, Luke Anderson works here, and he eats a hamburger. He said he spins it around because he feels the best bite is the center of the hamburger. So he spins his burger around in a circular motion, and he eats the entire burger before he touches a fry.
Here's where I will agree with him. The center
foolishness.
The center of the burger is, in fact, the best part of the burger.
Sure.
But
go ahead and spin your burger.
I will not go to the trouble of spin eating my burger.
No one spin eats a burger.
No, it's not worth it. Even if you're going to guarantee me this is the greatest veggie burger ever, I will just be like, you know what? I will enjoy the middle when I get to it.
What's worse, spin eating a burger or eating it with a knife and fork?
Spin eating.
Yes. Good answer.
Because knife and fork, you could at least give an excuse. Like, if you're older and you do that, I give you a pass.
I watched the worst movie I've ever seen. Well, I fast forward through the end. I watched the worst movie I've ever seen last night, but it doesn't compare to my favorite hate watch movie ever. I want to give you a rundown of the best worst hate watch movies ever. And one is a sports movie. Next on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. Oh, Will Darkins. You know, I think people think that I am sports-centric all the time. Not true. Not true. I listen to a lot of podcasts about serial killers, so I'm pretty well-rounded. Does that work? I don't think it works. I also...
So I should come to you if I suspect somebody is trying to kill me.
Yes.
Okay.
I literally watched a show, and they had a crime scene, and they just walked into the crime scene, and I was like, oh... This is lame. It's going to be two killers, and they're probably brothers, and one's older than the other one. And then that ended up being it because it was supposed to follow the official, like, kind of like serial killer profiling. That's how often I watch it.
Like, see, dude, you're like my wife too. She ruins every Dateline we watch.
Oh,
she knows she knows it. Like, about 5 minutes in, if we have met all of the primary characters,
she knows who
she
did
knows.
It.
She goes, yep, probably him.
See, Chantel, did you watch Sherlock with Brian Cuthbert?
No, I was aware of it.
What's his name?
Cuthbertson.
Cumberlander? Brian Cumberlander?
Brian Catchings.
No, the lead character.
I'm seeing it on Google.
You know who I'm talking about. Sherlock with Morgan Freeman. No, not Morgan Freeman. Oh, my God. What is happening to
Morgan
my brain?
Morgan Freeman was in
not
Sherlock
Morgan
Holmes?
Not Morgan Freeman. The guy from The Hobbit.
Can you send me that movie?
It's Freeman. It's Martin Freeman,
Morgan
right?
Morgan Freeman in
no,
Sherlock Holmes.
Come on. Oh my goodness. This is bad. This is bad radio. But she could decide who the killer was in Sherlock. And those were not easy to figure out in the first 5 minutes every time. Because she's like, oh, it's gonna be a da 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 da. I don't want to spoil it 3 years later. Anyway, I also like serial killer podcast, yeah. Sports, yeah. Video games, somewhat, like Madden and sports video games. And also I like a good musical every now and again. I really do. Mm. Cats, however, is an absolute atrocity, and I would rather have lemon squeezed into my eyes than watch it ever again. Not only is it terrible.
Cats the movie.
The movie.
Yeah.
That I watched just last night. Not only are the characters like CGI'd in cat body suits so they look like cats, bad choice, but also the CGI is so bad at times it actually seems to glitch where like you see stop motion because it's like the computer lags out for a half a second. It looks like a high school project that a kid put together with cat suits, and then they like kind of cleaned up the makeup / cat bodysuit blend. It's the worst. Some of the characters have sneakers on. Some of them have cat paws. Some of them have human hands. Some of them don't. You have to decide what these things are. You can't just be like, you know what? It's going to be too hard to CGI Idris Elba's hands. Let's just give him regular hands. Oh, Taylor Swift, she gets cat paws. You cannot do that. It ruins the film. That movie is absolutely horrible. It's the worst movie I think I've ever seen.
So let me blow your mind here for a minute, because I teased this to you during the break and you seem to not know what makes Cats the movie so terrible. When they did screen tests to people, the number one, because this happens with most movies, if it's a huge major motion picture, big budget, they will do what they call screen tests, where they have a mix of movie reviewers and regular people sit in, watch, analyze, tell you what they liked, didn't like.
It's Benedict Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman.
That's right.
Phew, okay.
The number one thing they all said was, I don't really believe these people are cats. And the movie producers were like, well, what do you mean by that? And they go, well, the special effects, they don't really do it for me. I can't really believe that these people are cats. It's not taking my mind into another dimension enough. So their solution was to CGI cat anuses on the actors.
I did not know that.
That's what they did.
No.
The release date got pushed 3 months in order to put cat anuses on the actors.
You know, I have to say, if your solution for a problem is we need more cat anus,
yes,
there's a pretty good chance you've already gone down the wrong path. It's like the Bob Burgers episode where the woman decides she wants to draw animal anuses and that's what her thing's going to be.
Yeah.
And she puts them all over the restaurant and they're just the anuses of the animals. And she's got some mental illness. So they let her put up her cat anus pictures and pig anus pictures all over the restaurant. And comedy ensues. It should not be a serious solution to how to drum up more business. Shouldn't be. But as much as I hate Cats, and Cats is an abomination.
The movie.
Yes. And it's a hate. I hate watching it. I will never watch it again. I fast forwarded after about 15 minutes and said, I'm done with this. Jupiter Ascending is the absolute best awful movie ever. Mila Kunis and Channing Tatum are in it. Mila Kunis plays she's like a maid who, it turns out, is actually like the queen of the universe. And she's called Jupe because, well, she's Jupiter. She is the real...
That doesn't give anything away, does it?
No, I'm going to give away the whole movie because it's amazing. Channing Tatum is part wolf, part human. He has... very visibly a blonde, I want to call it a goatee. I'm fairly confident they just shaved Brad Pitt's crotch from Troy and put his blonde pubes on that guy's face because it doesn't look right. He's a half dog, half person. When he shoots his toy gun, it's a real gun, but when he shoots it, it barks like a dog. Just in case the human dog hybrid thing that they've got going for him with the ears and stuff doesn't quite do it for you. They also have to remind you by making his dog or his gun go, whew, but it's like a, whew, like a puppy dog, little dog, like squeal barking. Very, very odd. Very odd choice. He has his wings ripped off and they didn't know what to do in the movie very clearly, but they were on a budget. So he literally rollerblades through the sky, and all they did instead of like CGIing something cool, they took out the wheels and just put like light. So literally in battle scenes, he's just rollerblading around the sky and it's very obvious they took the floor away.
So this is a technique that was actually used in 1979 with the first Star Wars. So
rollerblades.
Yes. In order to make it so it looked like they had hover cars, they just had regular cars that they chopped the top off of. And then they threw special effects back in the 1970s, put like an orange aura underneath it. And basically were just like, oh yeah, that's like the engine.
And like, that's cool in the 70s. So the basic premise is she's queen of the universe. She has three kids. She is the reincarnation of a queen who owns Earth. By the way, these creatures that live up in the sky, they're humans. Obviously they're her children. And they mine human lives to live forever. So it gives them like the youth serum. Earth is just a grower of humans. They kill them and that creates this liquid that they can drink to live or bathe in to live forever and stay young.
It's all very scientific.
Right. So she goes up to this spaceship because they get her And she looks exactly like the mom. There's a statue of the mom. And the basic premise here is that one of the brothers is a sex addict, and he's constantly having orgies.
That's
and they're,
cool.
They're not good orgies. They're with a bunch of like female aliens, but it's not what you want.
No buffet?
It's not good. Who's the guy with the duck face that played Stephen Hawking?
Son of a gun. Something Redding. I probably got that really wrong.
We're really, really bad at this. Eddie Redmayne. Eddie Redmayne's a great actor.
Yeah.
And you can see him in this movie be like, this isn't working.
Yeah.
He is shirtless and wears a cape.
Mm.
Shirtless. Eddie Redmayne, not the buffest dude, skeletal, in fact, as we find. Eddie Redmayne whispers all his lines, except every once in a while, he just completely, like, it's supposed to be some, like, ode to him being crazy. He just loses his mind, like, every 15th line. And every 15th line, he just, like, screams it insanely. His goal to claim Earth is not to, you know, befriend the mom and hope he inherits the Earth. No, no, no. He wants to marry his mother and procreate with her and therefore claim the Earth for himself so he can live forever. And it's not even like a, oh, he's a bad guy, he's into incest. It's like just part of the movie. Like, that's one of her options, is marry her son.
Well, and you know, they used to do that a lot, like in the Romans.
Yeah, so of course it makes sense in a modern movie to make it make sense. It's ridiculous. Then they have the Lord of the Rings guy that turns on him that dies in the first one, Boromir.
Yeah.
He's half man, half bee. And apparently, bees can smell princess. So the way they find out and confirm she's a princess is dog boy guy Channing Tatum, who has his wings taken off but rollerblades around the sky, goes to this house that is infested with bees. It has like the biggest beehive in the history of the world on the side of it. And all the bees swarm her, but don't swing her. And they're like, sting her. And they're like, oh, Mila Kunis is a princess. And then, rather than fall in love with her son, because that would be ridiculous, Mila Kunis falls in love with half dog, half person Channing Tatum. And we're not supposed to think it's weird.
Okay.
It's the worst movie. Please watch it, because it is so, so funny. They're all trying, except for Eddie Redmayne, who very clearly is like, this movie sucks. I don't care. I'm just going to overact the heck out of it, and people will think it's funny.
So it's a hot tub movie. He's got to pay off a hot tub, and he said, okay, I'll take this role.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got to be.
That's what I always consider those roles when you see, like, really great actors. Like, John Voight was in Super Babies, Baby Geniuses 2.
Yeah.
John Voight's, like, an incredible actor. Why was he in that? He had something to pay off and didn't have cash on hand and just took like 6 months out of his life to film it.
The directors also directed Cloud Atlas, which is another movie I think is an abomination.
Book's great though.
Book is great. And the second and third Matrix movie.
Ooh.
Who lets these people ever around another studio ever, ever, ever again? I don't know. It's bad. It's so bad. It's so good bad. I want to watch it again because it's so good bad. But watch it and tell me what you think, because you'll hate it. Oregon, prediction time. I think the Oregon Ducks are going to get one of the top 10 receivers in the country in the class of 2022. We'll talk about it next on Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan. Class of 2021, not quite in the books. Oregon, not a lot of names left. Corey Foreman, JT Tuimoloau, the number one and two prospects in the country, still on the board. Oregon trending in the wrong direction for Corey Foreman, probably will not get him. JT Tuimoloau is the guy they might get, 30 to 35% chance of getting him. Ohio State's the leader, Alabama and Washington also in the mix. But Oregon's doing a good job with him. He's a defensive end, defensive tackle, very versatile frontline defensive player, could play anywhere, any position in a 4-3 or a 3-4 defense. Really talented kid. Would also be a top 2-3 tight end in the country if he played tight end, and he's like 6'5", 290. So that's how athletic he is. He's a good basketball player as well. He's a post player, bullies his way around. Oregon's got a shot with him. And then five-star interior offensive lineman Bryce Foster. I think Oklahoma and Texas A&M probably have a better shot just because he hasn't visited Oregon, at least in a long time. He hasn't visited Oregon in several months, obviously, since COVID. And he's a great track athlete. He's the number one thrower in the nation. And I just think he needed to see Eugene one more time to get a look at Hayward Field, to get a feel for what Autzen's like on a game day, if Oregon was going to have a chance. With him not visiting during a game this fall, I just don't think it's very likely. So I think it's possible, now that the NCAA has declared that following this season, there will be an open window for transfers, that essentially every transfer will be immediately eligible. I think it's possible Oregon keeps some spots open and hopes they can get some all-conference guys to plug some holes and make a run at a national title next fall. They're going to be really good. The offense is going to be great. The defense should be great in the front seven. The question is going to be the defensive backfield, because they're going to lose so much talent. But Mikhail Wright's coming back. Diamador Lenore's back for this season. Obviously, he can play next season if he wants, because this year doesn't count. So there are some real pieces in place. Class of 2022 has two prospects already committed. Amarion Winston, the younger brother of Lamar Winston. He's a Central Catholic kid, a four-star outside linebacker. And Andre Dollar. Andre Dollar's the number nine tight end in the nation. I think they're going to get, sometime in the class of 2022, an elite receiver. And I think that elite receiver, they might get two. But that elite receiver I think they're going to get is Tobias Merriweather out of Union High School in Camas, Washington. This kid's the number 75 prospect in the nation, the number nine wide receiver. He's 6'4", 185 pounds. He played on the same 7-on-7 team as Troy Franklin and Keith Brown. He's very close to those young men. That's huge. Washington had a chance here. Sam Heward, the five-star quarterback, was the quarterback for FSP in the 7-on-7 tournaments and things this spring. His receivers were Troy Franklin, the five-star wide receiver committed to Oregon, and a guy a year younger, Tobias Merriweather, a top 100 prospect in the nation. I think Washington had a hope that Sam would build a rapport on the field with Troy Franklin and Tobias Merriweather and potentially get both of them. Instead, Oregon's got Troy Franklin. Oregon, I predict, is going to get Tobias Merriweather. He likes the Ducks. He's close. He's extremely close to Keith Brown and Troy Franklin, and he's had high praise for Oregon in the past. I think Oregon's doing a great job. Do I think he commits tomorrow? Nope. Do I think he commits in the next 2 months? No. I do think he'll commit before his senior season, which is obviously next fall, but I do think Oregon is definitely the front runner. The only real question is going to be, how comfortable is he with Brian McClendon and Joe Moorhead with a new offense? And I think if they can show him that offense will be electric and that they can get the ball into a lot of guys' hands, he'll choose Oregon. And I think they're going to be able to do that. The problem's going to be if Oregon isn't a dynamic offense this season or early next season. And the reason is, when you've got four elite receivers coming in the class ahead of you, if Oregon is mostly a ground and pound team, again, I don't think that's going to happen. A kid could say, I don't know if I'm going to get my targets. But I think Oregon's offense is going to be exciting. I think Ty Thompson, the five-star quarterback, is a selling point. And I think Tobias Merriweather can play behind these guys for a couple years and even get in some rotational time ahead of the, or a year behind this great class that's number one in the country, be a kind of supplementary piece for a while, and then be a go-to guy, develop into a go-to guy down the road. And I do think, I've watched both him and Troy Franklin in person, I do think that he has a higher ceiling than Troy Franklin. And Troy Franklin's a five-star wide receiver. I also like Dante Thornton better than Troy Franklin. I don't dislike Troy Franklin. I think he's one of the best receivers in America. I just think Dante Thornton has NFL All-Pro potential, that ceiling. And I think Tobias Merriweather has a chance to be one of the best two or three receivers in the nation. I think Tobias Merriweather picks Oregon. Thank you for listening to Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 10 of the Fan. Appreciate you.
Thanks for joining us for Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick, the show for college recruiting fans with the inside story on the Ducks, the Beavers, the national recruiting scene, and high school prospects across Oregon and Southwest Washington. Read Andrew's latest recruiting news in the Oregonian and Oregon Live, and listen for Andrew's updates throughout the week here on Portland's Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.